Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. It's nice to be with you again. Doesn't seem to have been, in some ways, quite such an exciting week, and yet on the other hand, there have been one or two quite surprising developments, which I will come to a little later in the programme. As usual, I would like to start with the message from Sheldon Neidl this week. And as I always say, and they're never any different in the sense that they are always full of very good information, very encouraging news. And this week they were looking at the potential for first contact, which is increasing, and told us that there are a number of complex scenarios that are now well underway on our world. And they said that the schemes and multi-level scenarios of these various factions continue to amaze them. They said that the power on our world is complex, and its intricacies are teaching them much about how the dark runs our reality. And they say, being caught in the midst of these things is most educative, but it also at times appalls us. Nevertheless, our personnel have garnered a great deal of what information is there and how to use this knowledge to untangle your world from the dark. And what we do is to observe the event in question and then execute the scenario that best moves it along toward the optimum outcome for first contact. They go on to say that this can become complicated as these muddled groups and outrageous activities interweave constantly with each other. At present, the political systems of many nations are in varying degrees of crisis. They say normally such a degree of instability could easily lead to another global conflict, but in this instance, these conditions are ungluing the structure that has upheld your reality since the end of World War II. This crumbling opens the way for change. It's later in the message, he mentions, that together with former members of the dark side, they comprise the foundation of an organization that is close to deeply reforming our world, and that this complex coalition has infiltrated most major governments and engage the help of many international groups. I find that interesting because, I guess, because of the very nature of what is happening there, the people involved cannot really reveal very much about their presence or what they're doing. And it really answers the question sometimes as to how much the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation are involved in events beyond Earth, and using them in a way to further our general interest and to get first contact into our reality. Now, they say that part of their strategy is to benefit from various economic and political situations arising on the world. For example, the war between the dollar and the euro. And they say that the weakening of the dollar has panicked many in the West and especially in Asia, and this creates an opportunity for the introduction of a new currency backed by precious metals. Now, I will stop there momentarily because I think that very statement there confirms that there is the funds in precious metals to back the benefits which have been promised through the act named as Nasara. And I think it's very interesting that that is effectively confirmed in that statement, because there are some people, I think, that have questioned whether this fund is really there after all. And they say this non-fiat currency is the spearhead for a secret movement to unseat fiat currency from its present powerful position. And they say that this project is ultimately tied to many powerful groups responsible for the production of oil, diamonds, and gold. And despite the supremacy of pro-dollar multinationals in this mix, the emergence of this precious metal-backed currency is actually very close to completion. They go on to say that there are innovative technical solutions that have been given to conscious inventors in Asia, Africa, and the Americas. But unhappily, they are being blocked by multinationals that convince major governments to test and then suppress them. Nevertheless, covert funding is occurring, and these pollution-reversing projects are to be released and expanded upon once the present US regime is removed. Other projects being developed by consortiums especially set up for the purpose are alternate energy production, new flight technologies, and more harmonious business models. Those statements very much confirm what the Galactic Federation has said now over quite a few years. And at various times, they confirm the nature of the changes that are going to take place. They mention currency reform, international debt forgiveness, and solutions for rising pollution and energy depletion are nearing resolution, and more is coming online. An overall plan is covertly and in some rare instances overtly manifested. But there you are, once again, there are some clear references to the benefits from the SARA. So we can say that it is alive and well, even if it doesn't appear in the original format as was considered to be the means by which it would manifest. They go on to say that while all this is happening and preparing the way for first contact, Mother Earth is likewise revving up for change. And they talk about Mother Earth altering her surface and about the tectonic plates that must be stabilized and relocked into position as she expands to her former size. And they mention that the onslaught of limited consciousness caused a gradual shrinkage. So obviously, as our consciousness expands, so it has the opposite effect. They talk of various things that are necessary and that Mother Earth started her renewal in earnest in the early 1970s. And the initial result was a big increase in the number and intensity of earthquakes. And this also in turn stepped up seismic activity, which caused a surge in volcanism. And they say that by the 1980s, the Earth had begun a minute expansion of the girth, and this pressure produced growing rifts in the surface and a locking of some of her tectonic plates. So, with the turn of the present millennium, the process accelerated enormously, and Mother Earth has reached a point where her tectonic plates are increasingly sticking. So there are still some changes to come, but bear in mind that our ET friends are in control of what takes place, and although certain changes will come of necessity, they will be there to keep any damage to a minimum and, of course, the loss of life. I now come to the final parts I want to read as an extract from Sheldon Nidal's message, and he is saying that Mother Earth is warning you of the need to push on more rapidly with your changes and to do so in a manner that aids her transformation as well. In this regard, we are monitoring both Mother Earth and you, while also readying ourselves for the joy of a massive first contact with you. May finally say, today we reviewed what is occurring on your world. As noted, many events are close to happening. We ask you to do your part and stay focused on helping to birth your new realm. So there we are. Those are the most pertinent points that I wanted to read from Sheldon's message. And I look forward to reading the next one. Hopefully there will be one as usual for you next Tuesday, which I won't see until Wednesday morning. Now, as usual, I'll quickly pick up some high points from my own messages. And last Saturday I had Kieron, who is my only Venusian, who is a relatively new contact but also working with the Galactic Federation. And he asks us to look around at what is happening, and says that karma would not allow the total destruction of Earth. That was said, I think, in the context of the various Earth changes, and of course any that might be induced by the actions of man in using particular weapons that may have some destructive force upon the Earth. He says, you demand an end to war, and the Galactic Federation are supporting their allies upon Earth, and they are doing their part to support the changes and bring them into being. And he said that those of the dark are still, although misguided souls, souls of the light, and that they are not out to destroy them. We've been told a number of times that there is never total hope lost for any of these souls that have gone very deeply into the dark side. They will still contain their spark of God, and there is always hope. And I think this is why we are frequently asked to be very compassionate and understanding when perhaps the day of reckoning upon Earth comes about. But Kieran said that they will ensure that these particular souls comply with the edicts of the higher councils, and if necessary, they will enforce the orders to free humanity and remove the last cabal. It is apparent that the leaders have at various times been approached by the benevolent ETs, but they appear to have taken very little notice of their warnings or their offers to make contact with us to help the Earth move forward. He urges us to try and help make the first moves to be rid of the last cabal. And he says that they, that is the Galactic Federation, closely follow every move that takes place on Earth. He talks of Venus, where there is no decay or aging, and tells us a little bit more about that particular planet. I now move on to Monday this week, when I had another Galactic Federation member, Talusar, come through, and he was talking about the solution to remove the last cabal with slowly moving cord, and if need be, they will ensure that legal action is taken to do it. In fact, they've said many times they would like us to be at the forefront of these actions, and that the legal way is the way to do it. They say that there is an ultimate time beyond which they will hasten proceedings, and that they have the authority to intervene if necessary. Indeed, they've had that authority for quite some time. He goes on to talk about how everything is in the now, and the potential exists for direct action. And if they take direct action, he said it will not be too overwhelming. But to do that, there is a correct moment to be chosen, which is yet undecided. He says that an exceptional display of their craft has been very much in their minds. And he talks of how there has been mention of a Star Wars program to repel them. But he says that would not affect them in as much that they have advanced technology and that they could quite easily cope with any attempts to remove them. On Tuesday, I had Saint Germain come through, and he said that he sees a distinct growth of light upon Earth that is raising the vibrations quickly. He reminds us that we are here to experience these changes firsthand. We have all chosen to be here at this time. And he said that as you go along, you take the experiences with you, and you learn from the role of the dark forces. They do have their purpose, and we certainly do learn a lot from what we see them do and participate in. And he says, look at the subtle changes taking place within you as a person. the greatest changes come from controlling your ego. And he says it must be overcome. And that when you are able to be one with all, the emphasis of the I becomes the recognition of the we. And he's saying that separation is a feature of experience in the duality of energy. And he says, finally, look after your body, and it will look after you. He does talk of space beings in the sense that he says you can expect a bold approach, but for the moment I will allow the outcome to speak for itself. Now, I felt when I was taking that message that was a direct reference to the messages that are going around or have been this week talking of a flyover over America and Canada. And at one stage there was talk of a landing, but that part was withdrawn in a subsequent message. And I will tell you that my feeling was that Saint Germain neither wished to deny or give confirmation of that particular message. And I guess that's correct. If you want to know the answer, just wait and see what happens, or indeed what doesn't happen. We will know within the following days. I mean, personally, I hope it's true. Nothing would thrill me more than an approach being taken that would announce to this world that they were there, and hopefully see it as a signal that they were getting closer to us. On Wednesday, I had another Galactic Federation man called Agda Greer, who's come through many times. And he's saying that now many governments throughout the world are unstable, and that peace can only be achieved if age-old disputes and differences are put aside. And he said, in future, commodities such as the riches of Earth will not be treated as something to make profit from, and that sharing will take place instead. He talks about new technology, which will replace the need to remove the Earth's resources, and that the war machine has to be dismantled, and that there will be new methods of transportation and communication, new production methods that will be without waste and non-polluting, and that fossil fuels will have no place at all. He talks of how hunger must be eliminated. And we know, do we not, over the years, how many people on this earth, they number millions, that actually die in various countries from hunger. I mean, that is an absolute travesty in my mind, in a world of plenty, that people anywhere could actually die for the want of food and particularly water. On Thursday, I had Saint Germain come through again, and he is asking us to consider what we desire from life, and saying that once you decide to move on, you have immediately stepped on that path. He reminds us that everything is about us, and that the knowledge we seek is within. He says that you will find you gravitate to new interests and friends, and you will see the world from a different perspective. And understand that all around comes from an act of creation, the creation that was first in the mind of God, and that nothing is by chance. He asks us to keep our feet firmly on the ground, saying that it will be chaotic at first, but light beings are working behind the scenes, and the earth will eventually be restored to its original beauty. Says that your full DNA will be restored, and you will be returned to being the angelic being that you really are, and of course were, before you actually came to Earth. On Friday, which is today, of course, the day of this program, I had Salusar back again, and he was talking about the Middle East, and commenting on how it could start another war. And that comment is, of course, you may recall, in line with something that was mentioned in Sheldon's message this week. And he's saying that the majority of people want peace. But what is happening with this Middle East problem is that countries are becoming polarized, and that Russia and China, for example, are moving behind Iran because of the threat against them. And he's using that as an indication of how, when that happens, you start to create two sides that face one another in a possible confrontation. And he says that we should focus our attention on the Middle East, and that we can help to alleviate the situation by sending a violet indigo flame. I was pleased to see that already today that Deborah, who circulates her beautiful pictures and other bits of information to many people, has already called for people to do a daily meditation on that particular point. And it's nice to see such a quick response. Salazar also says that we should send out peace and love to the leaders that are directly involved in these troubled areas. And obviously our peace and love can perhaps affect their decisions and bring calmness where anger or any other negative emotion may exist. Salusar confirms that ETs cannot intervene unless authorized, but they can hold the balance and in this way ensure that things do not in fact get out of control. He says that they are hastening the work of their allies, and they are watching the intentions of the dark to try and introduce nuclear weapons. And in fact, they will halt such intentions, and that they can neutralize their weapons anyway. They say that the dark will collapse, and that will remove the last obstacles to first contact. That's wonderful. Very good week. Some nice comments there. Interesting points raised. Now I'd like to come to my, what I call my little UFO section. I'm still working my way through my old copies of the Flying Saucer Review. And I've found an interesting article that goes back to the issue of September-October 1966. And it's talking about the sighting in 1965, which occurred at the island of Santa Maria in the Azores, when a cigar-shaped object flew over at 20,000 feet and stopped all the electric clocks at the airport for a period of 45 minutes. Well, now, of course, we know over many years since that date that this is not at all an unusual feature, that it affects the electrics upon the Earth. There was apparently another sighting which took place not many miles southwest of the Azores 3 days before that earlier one, and they're commenting on the prospect that it may indeed relate to the same UFO. And there was an observer who was a chief mate on a ship called Togrin Lien, and he saw what he says is a so-called flying saucer, only 200 odd meters above the ship. And they sent that report to various places, including the Geophysical Institute in Bergen, but they reported it, unfortunately, it was never published in any newspaper, so they're now introducing it into this particular review. So, I will tell you about this. On board the ship, the lookout on the port side, who was on the bridge, reported a bright object in the sky moving in a northerly direction. And he said when he got around to the port side, he saw an intense blue fiery tongue which was approaching the ship at tremendous speed. He said, I ran to the telephone and rang the captain, and without waiting for an answer, I seized binoculars and ran out onto the starboard side and saw the object through the binoculars as it passed over the ship. It passed straight abaft of the ship and at a height of from 200 to 400 meters under low clouds. He said it was like a bright star, and the moonlight was shining through between the pillow clouds, and I could clearly see the outlines of the upper part of it. Its shape was that of a cigar, and I could clearly see a row of square windows and the faint golden-orange-coloured light from inside it. There were no sign of wings or rudders, and the object had a bluish tongue of fire behind it, which was most concentrated near the tail, fanning out a little further back. And still further back, behind the body, I could see a tremendous number of globes, and from every globe there was streaming out a blue beam away from the body. The length of the fiery tongue would, I think, he said, have been about 100 metres, and the object seemed to be far bigger than any aircraft known at that present time. And he said its speed was tremendous, and it was visible for about 30 to 40 seconds. And despite its enormous speed and the closeness of its passage, he said they could not hear the least sound from it. So there, that's an interesting one. That's very much in line with the type of details given for other cigar ships, and a number of them have been seen with these square windows, and sometimes there's actually been very bright lights emanating from them. So that's an interesting one, considering how far back it goes. Now, I'll come to just one more interesting article in that particular Flying Saucer Review, and that relates to an Argentine astronomer and a scientist who was a Jesuit priest, Father Segundo Benito Reina. And he was director of the Atara Observatory at San Miguel, which is a province of Buenos Aires. And on November the 14th, 1964, he was looking out into space, and apparently he's got quite a professional telescope. And he was looking for a satellite that was in the sky at that time called Echo 2. And it appeared on time when he was looking for it, which was 8:37 in the evening. And 8 minutes later, he said there appeared coming from the west. He said it was near the star Pegasus, a UFO on a plane perpendicular to the plane of the satellite. And he said when the UFO was close to the satellite, Echo 2, and he thought it was at the same altitude, the UFO made a 180-degree turn and proceeded off towards the east, disappearing below the horizon, which at that time was very near to Orion. And he said 7 minutes later, he saw another UFO, which may have been the same one, of course, and that emerged from the neighborhood of Centaurus, and shot around the satellite Echo 2 and then vanished in the neighbourhood of Andromeda. Another 8 minutes later, when the satellite was near the south, the UFO appeared from the east, near the star Altair, and appeared to have the form of a cigar. He said then it became circular and shot round the satellite Echo 2, stopped momentarily when moving towards Canopus, and then moved down towards the horizon, almost together with the satellite Echo 2. He said in order to watch all this, the telescope and the dome had to be moved very quickly. He said that fortunately that was easy, as there were people outside watching to warn the astronomer each time the UFO made its appearance. He said at certain times the UFO filled the field vision of the telescope, appearing larger than a full moon. And when it was down near the horizon, it could be seen perfectly. And he described that there was a central cupola, and it was greenish, like a Mercury lamp. It had a pale yellow nucleus and blue edges, and by all accounts, it was a marvellous spectacle. And that report said this is possibly the only time that a UFO has been followed through a telescope with such a degree of magnification. So that's indeed a very unusual sighting, and I'm glad that I was able to read of it. Because as I commented before, it is quite surprising how some of these really interesting sightings never come up again, isn't it? I'll finally tell you one other interesting article in the Flying Saucer Review. You can make of it what you will, but it relates to a morning on February the 8th, 1855. And it refers to the county of Devonshire in England, And when the people awoke, they found an incredible line of marks running for 40 miles across the snow-clad countryside. They say that this case has never been explained, and it came to be known as the Devil's Footprints, for the marks were shaped precisely like the hoofprints of a small, and they describe it as one-legged donkey, whatever that is, and that there was an interval of precisely 8 inches between the marks, and they were about 2 inches wide and ran over hill and down, across fields and gardens, across roofs and walls, all the way to an area called Tynmouth by Dawlish, Lindstone and Exmouth to Topsham. Now, that won't be much to you listening to this in other countries, but for people who are listening to it in England, they can maybe visualise the area concerned. Now, they said there was a scratching of heads and a lot of theorising, and a cleric actually decided that it might have been a kangaroo, which seems quite incredible now, doesn't it? I mean, kangaroos would have been quite rare in England any time, let alone 1855. But there you are, people always put through their own theories. But the person reporting this article said, but wait, I forgot the one big hop, because the footprints ran down to the bank of the estuary of the River Exa and continued in exactly the same way on the other side, 2 miles away. But there you are, that's a very interesting one, isn't it? One can only speculate, because some other people have seen about 3 foot wide wheels, some sort of contraption I think that the ETs use when they're measuring or taking readings, which move across countryside, but maybe this was just slightly or almost above the surface, and this is why the imprints were there for everybody to see, because when the wheels were seen over dry land, they were just fractionally above the surface of the earth. So connecting two different types of events maybe gives us the answer. Now I'm coming to a little bit of general news. And the one I heard this week on the World Service was rather sad. Apparently there are 2.5 million people in Africa, that is East Africa, that presently need our help. And because of drought conditions, obviously brought about by low rainfall, they are all likely to be severely affected by the lack of food, by hunger, and of course some will die. And the problem is they feel that this condition will worsen this spring, so we haven't actually seen the worst of it yet. Doesn't it really make you wonder what sort of world we live in when those things can happen? And what do we hear of any attempts made to help these poor beings? I don't know. This week, in a number of the main daily papers, there was an article relating to a TV programme that appeared on our Channel 4 that relates to a comment made by General Sir Michael Rose, who was also chief of the UN forces in Bosnia. And he said that Tony Blair should be impeached over the war in Iraq. And he also said that if he had been asked to go to war, that he would have resigned his commission rather than carry out orders to wage war in Iraq. And various other people came in on the programme, which was hosted by an independent MP called Martin Bell. And he said, to go to war on what turns out to be false ground is something that no one should be allowed to walk away from. The politicians should be held to account, and my own view is that Blair should be impeached. It was quite a moving programme, and it was called The Failure of War. And it really showed you why these recent wars, going back to the early altercations in the Middle East, are a failure. And General Sir Rose went on to say, talking of Blair's actions in the run-up to the war, that somewhere in between getting the politics wrong and actually acting illegally. So there we are. This is interesting development in this country because we suffer from censorship as well, maybe not as severe as you do in the States. And I'm sort of surprised, really, that this program even got off the ground. Because in normal news reporting of the war, a lot of the nasty stuff is edited out or not allowed to go through. Because they don't want us to realize too often how awful these wars are. But there we are. That will find its own outlet somewhere, the same as the Bill of Indictment, which I understand was to be served at the White House on Tuesday, and that is calling for the impeachment of Bush. So it's interesting that both of these things on impeachment are happening at the same time. I also read this week that the Women Peace Activities last Thursday, that's not yesterday, a week yesterday, launched a global campaign to end the warfare in Iraq, and also the bloodshed, of course. And the Women Say No to War campaign comes, apparently, as the Bush administration contends with growing opposition to its Iraq policy. Apparently, the campaign's demands are to be delivered in a statement bearing a targeted 100,000 signatures and are to be handed in to the leaders in Washington, D.C. and to the U.S. embassies around the globe on March the 8th, and that is International Women's Day, and less than 2 weeks shy of the third anniversary of the U.S. and U.K.-led invasion of Iraq, which we will remind you began on March the 20th, 2003. Apparently, the name of Pennsylvania Democratic Congressman John Merker has come up again. He's a former Marine and Vietnam veteran who had backed the war, and he said again just this week in ABC News interview that were he eligible to join the U.S. military now, he would not. Nor would he expect others to join. And General Peter Pace, chairman of the Joint Staff's Chief of Staff, took the unusual step of wading into an ongoing political controversy Thursday when he told a Pentagon news conference that Merker's comments were damaging to troop morale and recruitment efforts. Well, in fact, we know that, but can we see in this why they try to keep the nasty side of war quiet? Because clearly it does make a difference to their recruitment efforts, and perhaps they are being told in no uncertain terms that the people of this planet are getting fed up with war. A last item on the general news relates to the Mayan elders' warning that we're going to have a hard year. And this came out through the Earth Changes TV, and it was hosted by Mitch Batros. And he was saying that this came about through a recent phone conversation he had with Carlos Barrios, who's High Priest Mayan Elder, and he told him of events to come that were unsettling. And he said, here is what I can tell you. Watch for hurricane and cyclone activity in the Atlantic and Indian Ocean, perhaps simultaneously. And Carlos Barrios said, watch for the beginning of something very strong. Watch for severe snowstorms and drought occurring at the same time, but in different regions. And he did say that war is likely to break out, and that the US will attack Iran and Syria, and that Pakistan and India tension will escalate and possibly single strike exchange from each country will occur. Apparently Carlos has the dates, but he said he wished to wait until his meeting with the elders, and if given permission, will discuss disclose all in their special broadcast on January the 11th. Well, of course, as you'll realise, that has passed, and I certainly haven't seen anything yet, so makes you wonder whether that broadcast took place. But okay, he says war is likely to break out. Well, that is evident from what we'll see happening and the threats against Iran to do with preemptive strikes and all that type of talk. So we know what the possibility is. And it's been mentioned in my own messages. So we'll let that one follow its own course. And now to conclude the programme, although I've got quite a bit of time left, I want to go to some of the spiritual messages that are floating around. And there's a very good one that came out today through Nancy Tate. And it was a wake-up call from Hatton. And what I like to pick out in that is he said, "I will address the presence of various ideas that may be floating around in your head and how to sort them out." And he was talking about ideas which we may glean from the internet and emails and other things, and how it sort of sometimes fogs up your vision and clouds the sureness of your brain. Maybe you don't know what to make of all these different reports. And he's saying that it shows you that with these ideas and messages that are spread around, there is a great opportunity for discernment. And he's saying, what is it that resonates within your being and sends your heart to a place of solidity and warmth? This is what you can take as truth, for it speaks to a place within you that recognizes what is of relevance to you. And he said that you think about it, and maybe there is a deeper reason for the various ideas and reports and messages to come through. And this is a place for all to use discernment and to realise where they stand at any given moment on any issue. And he says, you have found that there is in many cases a wide diversity of opinion on many of the messages and reports that are out in the stream of emails. Where do you suppose these ideas come from? Are they perhaps the result of so many ideas that are floating around and being given attention to? And he's saying, oh no, you say, they're either true or they're not. And he says, consider that there is truth and untruth in any or all of the messages according to the viewer. Now I'll leave it there because I felt that was very relevant to, well, any time and to anyone who likes to read the different messages, which I certainly do. But I think there may be a particular reason to mention that this week, because some of the messages that have caused a bit of a flurry are those that have come out through the Telepathic Institute of North America under, I think, a number of people's names. And to put it simply in a nutshell, they are talking of this flyover that I mentioned earlier, which is going to affect America and Canada. And they say that half of America will be, I suppose, flown over at the time. And to draw attention to this flyover, beforehand they will dim what they believe to be the street lights as a signal. So this is expected to take place sometime during next week. And I haven't seen any later message to contradict that, so I trust I'm giving out correct information. But you see, you find these predictions in some messages, you don't find any mention in others, and maybe even in some might be things that suggest it won't happen. So I'm reverting back to what Hatton said, I think this is what he's really saying. Whatever you read, maybe don't allow it to confuse you, just read it and understand that there is sometimes truth and untruth mixed together in these messages because of the number of thoughts that are going around. Anyway, the good thing about predictions is that as long as they're not too far forward, we don't see the outcome anyway. And as I mentioned earlier in one of my own messages, Saint Germain says, more or less, let it ride and we'll see the outcome of it anyway. You know, don't worry, just wait and see. Now, there's a lovely site called Daily Quado, or Quado, and we get what they call a daily portion that comes out with short messages And I like the one I saw a few days ago. It originally came out on the 7th of January. And the title of it was Fall in Love with Yourself, which is a lovely idea, isn't it? And it says, today, fall in love with yourself. Let your heart beat faster at the prospect of spending an hour alone with such a fascinating, intricate and complex person. Let your heart fill with love as you think about how precious you are, how lovable, how compassionate and caring you are. Let your eyes sparkle with joy as you consider your sense of humour, that quirky way you have it, of looking at things. And I think that's nice. It reminds us not to forget ourselves. And we should love ourselves, warts and everything, it doesn't matter. It's said often that if we can't love ourselves, we can't love other people. So I think that was a nice reminder, put in such a nice, gentle way. Now, there's also another nice source of messages that comes from what they call heaven. And it is God who channels through that source. And I have one here that goes back a few days to the 5th of January, talking about an aura of love. And I just wanted to pick out one or two things in there, which I thought were nice. God says, consider love an aura, an inescapable aura. Consider that you are on the threshold of love. Consider that you walk in love, you stride in love. You cannot miss it, you cannot step over it. You can only walk through love. It will cling to you. You carry it with you. It is your daily portion. It is not for emergency use only. It is not hard tack. It is love. Fits in a little bit, doesn't it, with that other message that I've just read. I mean, and I haven't purposely put them together like this. That's just a coincidence. Anyway, the message goes on to say, I did not give you an ounce of love. I gave you all of it. Yours for the giving. It is easier to give love than to ask for it. What need have you to ask for love when all of love is at your fingertips? When your heart is overflowing with love, when your heart is more love than it knows what to do with, when love is multiplied in your heart by the minute, when love flows through your veins, when a thought of it enters your head, when it will not keep silent any longer, when it will announce itself no matter what, when it will no longer scrape its feet or stammer, when it opens its mouth wide and declares itself for all to hear, when it says, look, I am loved, I'm going to pour myself everywhere. No longer will I be held back. I am loved, and I am loved to express. I express myself now, I express myself from your heart. It goes on to say a little bit more, and they come through what is called the God Writing International Society of Heaven Ministries, which is in Fairfield. And the person who channeled that one through evidently was Gloria Wengrop, who is an overseer. I thought that was rather nice. I'm looking at another one now, all around about the same period. This came through Karen Carbo, who sends out quite a number of different messages through what she calls just channelings, and you can subscribe to that and get all the channelings if you wish. And this one came through a being called Bartholomew, who is a planetary brother. And he was talking really about the power of thought, and he says that any emotion created by the ego alone has limits because you are using the limitations of the ego to create it. So your most horrendous feeling, fantasy or fear, has a limit to it. And everything that is limited can be gotten rid of. Emotions such as fear, anger, grief or judgment can be removed if you so desire. And then he goes on to give an example of how you can relate to that symbolically and get rid of it. And he goes on to say you have endless choices and flexibility within consciousness. You can visualize the painful event or feeling with a different outcome, or see yourself no longer weak and helpless, but strong and capable. You can also choose to feel an expanded state of awareness and look at the entire situation from another perspective. He says, concentrate on what you wish to have in your life. What you can concentrate on, you make real, you make manifest. If you are inundated with difficult feelings, you know now you have the capability to create expansive ones. It's your reluctance to let go of the negative feelings that keep you trapped. Drop them out of your mind. Your past cannot trap you unless you let it. Drop the past and be here now. And then you can learn the delight and joy of just stepping out into a different frequency. Now, it's only an extract from the message, but again, I think that gives us some beautiful ideas there. I like that a lot. Now, not sure if I've mentioned one of the messages that come through Abraham Lincoln, and this was circulated through Michael Worldwide Newsletter, and let me see, this was the 1st of January, yeah, goes back a few days now, and it was Abraham Lincoln on the government solving the conundrum, and his message actually came through Helen Engel on the 29th of December. They're wonderfully different messages, and Abraham Lincoln talks, I suppose, as he would if he was standing in front of Congress now. They're quite straightforward and understandable. Now, I don't propose to read the whole of the message, I wouldn't have time for that, but I'll read part of it that, again, took my attention. And he's talking about leaders and the like, talking about what will they do and the problems we might get, because when we vote for a president, the candidate has been chosen by someone who has no interest in America nor in the American people. And he says the candidate has been chosen by a very small group of outsiders, and he's saying, but what is their interest? Their interest is themselves. Now we have another conundrum. How did this happen? What did we do in America that allowed someone from somewhere else to take over our government and make laws that are not good for the people? And he said this was a terrible mistake, and this may be the first step in the restoration of our Constitution. In the selection of honourable men and women into the Congress and the Senate and into education of all of the people. He asks questions such as, what do you think? Are you ready to release those who have control over your money, over your health system, over your education system, over your highway system, your natural resources, and your power supply? Are you ready to release those who have control over those elements of society over and above your elected government? Then later in his message he said, the step to be taken will be to bring in the president who will be heard and who will be respected, and who will guide a government for the benefit of the people and for the benefit of America. And then the people will be taught about government, taught about groups, taught about living compatibly together, taught about brotherly love and the respect of other nations. And he says, I throw this out to you to consider and to ponder about. And as we speak further, you may be able to express yourself. Tell someone in your community what you think. Be a mouthpiece for Abraham Lincoln. Be a mouthpiece for yourself and your children and your grandchildren. So I thought, you need to read the whole message, but there's some nice thoughts in that one. I have a second message that came through Abraham Lincoln, but I feel I may not quite have time to do justice to that one now, so I haven't got too long left. But I'll keep that one aside and make it my first one next Friday. Now I'm looking at what I've got here next, and there was an article, which I'll really conclude the program with now, which was talking of cosmic highways, and it came from or through Warren Chakurai, and he was talking about each year immediately preceding during the holy Christmas season, the great cosmic law permits the opening of the spiritual highways between universes and galaxies. And he said, like shining meteors, countless numbers of cosmic beings, archangels and other masters of light come sweeping through. And he's talking about how they are accompanied by a radiant band of spirits that comprise their court and who abide within their aura. And he says, many of which are their co-creations with God, born of their own life essence. And he says, as company after company of the celestial beings meet and pass each other in interstellar space, exchanging joyous salutations expressed in music and song, their harmony, their happy vibrations, mingle with the add to the harmony of the spheres. And he says, as these glorious songs of praise rise in a mighty chorus of thanksgiving to the heart of the one eternal Father, the entire universe resounds with joy, gladness, and goodwill. And he goes on to talk about it being truly a period of great joy, happiness, and freedom when these shining ones, which he refers to as the sun, that is both S-O-N-S and S-U-N-S, the shining suns, and daughters of God are freed by cosmic law from their prior commitments of voluntary service to assist lesser, and sometimes, he says, unappreciative evolutions such as we, the people of Earth. And he said it is a time when they are permitted to visit those they love who dwell on stars and planets other than their own. So it is our small Earth who plays host to many of these glorious celestial ones, while the immortal threefold flame is visible upon the altar of Shambhala at that time of the year. And he says our planet Earth is greatly benefited by the opening of the cosmic highway. So this gives us an opportunity to meet or come into touch with these cosmic beings from other solar systems, and they include such as Osiris and Isis, Apollo and Diana, Krishna and Sophia, angels and archangels, seraphim and cherubim, as well as many others who are particularly interested in the evolution of Earth. And they come, he says, and give us a hand in transmuting Earth from a dark star to a planet of light. So there we are. I'm going to finish on that note. Really isn't time to fit another message in. I would thank you for being with me again and hope you enjoyed the program and my selection of material. It'll be very interesting to come back to you next week and report what has happened. Things are on the edge of many exciting things. So enjoy your week, and I will now leave you. God bless you all.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, UgginService.com production, and A Service to Others Endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.